This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com.
Getting America back on track. Bill Martinez live.
Bottom line, Obama hears about all of these efforts, and the brave struggle to contain it begins. And Obama meets with experts and advisors. They advise him what to do. Obama gives his own counsel. At the end of it all, Obama decided to do nothing other than call Putin and say, cut it out. An act of bravery and courage unlike most other in American history. And after telling Obama to cut it out, telling Putin to cut it out, he then confronted Putin again in China and said, stop it or else. Putin and the Russians quaking away, cowering in laughter at the bravery and courage of Barack Hussein. Oh, for 4 months, August, September, October, November, they knew this was going on as far as this story is concerned. At the end of it all, did nothing to stop it. The story even has that quote from an Obama administration insider saying, yep, we choked. And that's what Trump is saying. He didn't choke. Obama didn't choke. He thought Hillary was going to win. Trump's exactly right about this. He thought Hillary was going to win. They all did. If they go public with what the Russians are doing, colluding in the election, they're going to make it look like that Hillary was benefited by this, or that the effort was curtailed and stopped and Hillary won because of it, and they didn't want to get in the way. They didn't want to taint Hillary's victory because they all thought she was going to win in a landslide. I will submit to you the real reason Obama didn't do anything is because there wasn't anything to do, because the Russians weren't tampering with the election. They were not tampering with the votes, as the Washington Post story again claims, as every story on this subject has had to claim for the last 6 months, no evidence to suggest. And Obama, even during this period of time, during these 4 months, was telling the people of America, it can't happen. The Russians cannot successfully tamper our elections. They're too widespread. It's too diverse. There are too many precincts, too many counties, electoral college. You wouldn't know where to go to hack. Obama assuring everybody it couldn't be done. This story says Obama was scared to death it could be done, worried very seriously it was being done, and decided to do nothing about it.
Wow. You love Rush's perspective here. Rush Limbaugh, of course, commenting on, this whole scenario. And I think most of you get it. Most of you understand what's going on. This is another one of those bricks in the wall, as Pink Floyd would sing, in this whole scenario. Is when you have something so shocking and unexpected happen, like this past election, and let's face it, I think more than half of America was shocked that Donald Trump was able to win over Hillary Clinton. Elated, but nonetheless still shocked, because all the pundits and the mainstream media that had been carrying the water for the DNC said it was going to be a landslide. It was going to be run away. I mean, it was just, they were all so giddy. You remember, Scott, going into election night that, they were just there. They had the champagne, it was a fait accompli. There was no doubt about it. But then something happened along the way. So now you got to make something out of nothing. And here it is. It was all in their control. It was all in their favor. And the point is well taken. Where is the president of the United States? What didn't happen on Donald Trump's watch? This is Barack Obama again. Speaks to and suggests the incompetence of this administration in trying to play this thing out. And again, that's what I think. With all this stuff that's happening, you get all these unintended consequences, like this special counsel that's coming up. Do people think, they're going to really nail Trump to the wall on this? And what are they finding out? is that there's a lot of truth there that they have to step over and ignore that's going to indict the former president and Hillary Clinton all the more. You watch what happens. This is Bill Martinez. We're live.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it. Bill Martinez Live, a program about current events, our culture, our values, our politics, and our future. And now, Bill Martinez.
You better stop, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.
Well, hello, America. Back with you. 6 minutes after the top of the hour. I'm Bill Martinez. Sarah Westwood joins us now. It's been a while since we've had a chance because she's so doggone busy. I mean, she's the White House news correspondent for the Washington Examiner, and they've got you going nonstop, lady, don't they?
Yeah, it's definitely been busy. And
whoop, did we lose you? Oh, no. Suddenly we're there. Well, she got so excited. She's so busy, they hung up her phone. But, of course, Sarah's a brand-new mommy, too, on top of this. I was going to share with you. Oh, she's got such her little boy is just way so cute and get, you know, we're in the picture exchanging business. Okay, we got her back. Hey, I was just talking about how cute your little boy is. I love seeing the pictures of him all the time, you know. So, you know, on
he's
top of being,
cute.
I know, but on top of being busy, it's, oh yeah, I got to be a mom too, right?
Yeah, that is definitely also a full-time job.
Well, the most important job, but we appreciate you coming on and giving us up to date in terms of, you know, your latest column is the White House leaving health care heavy lifting to the Senate Republicans. That would seem to be the case, obviously, right?
Right. It's very different from what we saw in the House, where you had President Trump personally going down to Capitol Hill to talk to members, and you saw him inviting lawmakers and their families over for bowling nights and pizza nights in the White House, sort of a much more hands-off approach to getting the health care bill through the Senate. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Obviously, the Senate is not the House. It's a very different dynamic over there. But
it's because senators don't know how to bowl. They don't know how to bowl. That's part of the problem.
Right, that's it. That's it. They have fewer skills.
Yes.
And also that they are just going to put this entire pressure on Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. It's really his bill. He's the one who led the closed door talks that got us to this point, that produced the draft, and he's the one who, for better or worse, is going to bear the blame if the bill doesn't pass this week, because he is leading the charge in terms of lining up members to vote on the bill.
Is your sense, Sarah, that this is kind of a little bit of a last-ditch effort? I mean, look, we're going to give it the best we can, and if not, we're ready to move on to tax reform and, you know, set this aside if they have to.
You know, the White House has already spent so much of its political capital trying to get health care passed. I mean, it's been at this since April, and now they do want to move on to other topics. They think it's obvious that they need some kind of major legislative win before the end of the year, or else then we'll be in an election year and it'll be very difficult to get any kind of major legislation passed. So the White House recognizes this. They know they can't spend the entire summer on health care, or else they're going to burn a lot of time. And Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, he's not Speaker Paul Ryan. He's not willing to drag this out for months, make this a long, painful process.
Mm-hmm. Well, not to mention, it would be one thing if they weren't taking a five-week break in the middle of summer. I mean, they're days away, you know, from a five-week. They're going to be out almost 5 weeks. I think it is 5 weeks, end of July through the entire month of August. I mean, if they said, hey, time off on vacations, we're going to stay here and do the people's business because, you know, for whatever reason they've been able to get to it. We can all argue why, how things have been obstructed and delayed and obfuscated. Not to mention we've got an investigation here and there all being a distraction. It would be refreshing if they would say as much. I know there's you're hearing some talk from you know, some of the politicians saying, hey, maybe we should stay here in D.C.
Right. And I think that the August recess is something of a self-imposed deadline for Republicans. The White House has also bought into this idea that if the health care isn't on President Trump's desk by the time Congress leaves for the August recess, then it's time to just abandon the entire policy. And so it's really crucial that it gets through the Senate here before the July 4th recess, because this is not the end of the road. Now the bill would have to go to conference. The House and the Senate would have to reconcile the differences between the two policies, settle on one final version, pass that, and then get it to President Trump's desk. There's still so much to be done to meet that deadline when lawmakers leave that very first week in August, that there's not a lot of time to tweak the bill just to get it through the Senate, and then only to have a whole new set of tweaks happen down the road.
Exactly. What's the worst that could happen, Sarah, if they table it? I mean, if they just can't get to it, and Mitch McConnell says, look, we're going to live another day on this thing. You know, we've lived with Obamacare this long. Maybe more people will understand what a disaster it is. Because I think part of the challenge, and we were talking about this yesterday, is at any one point, probably about 10% of the people are actually having to deal with Obamacare. And of that, you know, even less percent of people who are the ones that are, you know, paying the freight. I'm not talking about the people like that one gal in the town hall that says, look, I pay a dollar for my Obamacare. Don't take that away from me. Well, boy, that's a great. We all wish we only paid a dollar for health care. Not the case. Many of us are paying the full freight of it and all the taxes that go along with it. And, you know, we're the ones that are shouting right now and saying, look, this is untenable. And not to mention those that are finding themselves suddenly without any insurance company whatsoever.
That's been a very effective strategy from the Democrats, which is to sort of ignore the fact that the Obamacare insurance markets are collapsing in a lot of states, that there are many counties throughout the country where consumers don't have any options. I mean, clearly the system as is isn't working. Mm. And the only acknowledgement the Democrats have made of that is just suggesting that Republicans would be better served by working with them to fix the existing law. And at the end of the day, the bill that Republicans put forward is more or less a fix to Obamacare. It doesn't actually dismantle the system the way I think a lot of conservatives envisioned an Obamacare repeal might be. It's really lawmakers arguing over semantics at this point. Democrats say they won't sign on to the bill as long as it's characterized as a repeal and not as a repair. But that's really what the Republican bill does. And the reason why it's not garnering more support in the Senate is because it doesn't do enough to cut Obama-era regulation. So it's a really interesting battle over semantics, more or less, in the Senate, which is part of why it's not already passed.
Yeah, and I think you're right there, Sarah, that, you know, Democrats are not willing to abandon this legacy piece of legislation in the name of their former standard bearer. They see this as anathema. And so there's got to be some, if they're going to get any kind of Democratic support, and I believe that we should find a way to do that because we work better when we do it together. And there's got to be a way. I mean, there's heavy lifting as we understand here with healthcare. I mean, look what's happened. This administration's only been dealing with this for less than 6 months. It took, you know, President Obama and all the haggling and special deals and exemptions some 18 months to get it through, right?
Right, and the argument from Republicans is that they've been working on Obamacare appeals for 7 months now, so, I mean, 7 years now,
excuse me, right.
So they don't need any additional time, but the fact of the matter is they are rushing this legislation. They're trying to use the pressure of an impending recess to get votes, and it'll be interesting to see if that strategy works.
Sarah Westwood, I'm Bill Martinez. Thank you.
Regarding the law of attraction, but what if all these books are missing the most important information we can use when it comes to activating this law in our lives? The new book, It's Time to Align, the most powerful self-help book ever written by Alan Lautinger, takes a look at how the law of attraction really works and how it is being suppressed in our lives. Learn how to overcome this manipulation and how to experience alignment with the creative power of the universe. Get the new book, It's Time to Align, available at Amazon.com.
If food became scarce, would you be able to feed yourself and your family? Have you found some emergency food supplies can cost upwards of $300 for a month's supply? And worst of all, they're packed with chemicals and other unpronounceable ingredients. At NorthwestFork.com, our mission is to provide you with food that's not only healthy and natural, but also affordable. At NorthwestFork.com, for only $127, you can order meals that are naturally high in fiber, carbs, and protein, packaged in Mylar bags with oxygen absorbers for superior shelf life. For a limited time only, your order ships free. But that's not all. Enter promo code PREP10 to receive 10% off your entire order. Call 800-700-2184 today. NorthwestFork.com keeps prices low by buying directly from suppliers in the Pacific Northwest, then passing the savings to you. Go to NorthwestFork.com or call 800-700-2184 for the most cost-effective and healthy food storage solution. That's NorthwestFork.com at 800-700-2184.
My husband says, you are what you eat. Not true, dear. I did my research. Actually, you are what you can absorb. So I didn't feel the vitamins and supplements I was taking were effective. I didn't feel any different. Then I switched to Protovite, a liquid multivitamin, mineral, and phytonutrient complex. And wow, you've got to see the video at TrueHealthFacts.com. That's TrueHealthFacts.com. Then call 502-410-3411. Protovite is nutrition you can feel. Protovite is nutrition that gets in.
Be prepared for the next disaster with the Shelter Pod. The Shelter Pod is a large, all-season, heavy-duty, quick-deploy shelter. The Shelter Pod system can be set up in 30 seconds and includes an emergency medical kit, water filter, survival tools, and more. Are you prepared to take care of your family? Do you have everything in one place ready to go? Get it now or enter to win a complete Shelter Pod system at ShelterPod.com. The Shelter Pod at ShelterPod.com. Shelter when you need it most.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Stop. Put that mobile phone down because it may have been compromised. Are you aware that many identity theft issues start right on your mobile device? My friends at LibertyID.com have helped over 60,000 individuals without failure get their identities back because of them being compromised. Don't be next. Call 844-44-LIBERTY. That's 844-44-LIBERTY or visit LibertyID.com to find out if, in fact, you've been compromised and use discount code GCN.
It's about time someone had the courage to say it. Bill Martinez, live.
Hey, on behalf of We the People, this is Bill Martinez coming to you fresh every day, 9 to noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific. Just about 19 minutes after the top of the hour, Carrie Severino joins us now. Chief Counsel, Policy Director of the Judicial Crisis Network in that capacity. She has testified before Congress on assorted constitutional issues and briefed senators on judicial nominations. Carrie, good to have you with us. How are you doing?
It's great to be here. I think it's a good day following the ending of the Supreme Court term here.
Well, a lot going on. And, of course, one quick thing before we get into it, speaking of the Supreme Court, Anthony Kennedy, people are looking at signs of a possible retirement announcement.
It's possible. We just don't know. I mean, it's possible he'll decide to stay on for another year. He's almost 81, and he did decide to step down the last day of the term. But, you know, there's no rules for these things. They could do anything they want. So we'll wait around, but he may choose to do that next summer. We'll see.
Well, it'll be rather exciting. We know that, you know, Donald Trump could, they say, have, you know, two, maybe three shots at a Supreme Court nominee. And, of course, this would be the next one, you know, should this come. But it would seem, based on the scuttlebutt, if we can, you know, talk in those terms, that, you know, it is imminent.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm so excited watching Justice Gorsuch on the bench. That was a real slam dunk for the president. Mm. So I think it would be a great thing to see him have several more justice picks, because that list that he's going back to every time has been a real group of great, solid jurists.
Without a doubt. Well, Kerry, what was your take on the Supreme's taking up the travel ban and allowing certain parts to go forward?
Yeah, well, I think the biggest takeaway from this is those lower court decisions that really went beyond what the legal requirements were, and I think got very far into their political preferences on what they think should be done with these orders. Those had a real serious knockdown yesterday when the Supreme Court significantly narrowed that stay that was given. The courts below had said, you can't implement this travel restrictions at all. You can't even, some of them said, you can't even look at the people and start considering whether you need stricter travel restrictions. And the Supreme Court unanimously, so not even a single liberal justice, said that was the right answer. They said, look, for a lot of these people, there's no connection whatsoever with the United States. Some people, maybe they have family here or they've been admitted to a university here. But for a lot of these people, there's no connection whatsoever. They can't just do and say we don't like the president's order. And presidents, when it comes to national security, really do get a wide berth from the courts. And that's because it's such an important issue. It's so crucial to the nation's safety that the president have the ability to make those important judgment calls. So I thought that was a great win, and it shows the Supreme Court, at least, was applying the legal principles when some of those lower court judges were acting more as activist judges and politicians.
Well, Kerry, you know, and I think it's interesting, too, because you get these policy experts that right away chime in and they want to, you know, tear this this order apart. But, you know, wasn't the president was asking for something president, you know, permanent. He was saying, look, we need to call time out on this. We need to get the policy together. But clearly, for the sake of American safety, which is, last time I checked, my job one to do. You know, I think we ought to consider these things, and everybody right away, well, what about these people? What about people, you know, who have helped us out? Well, all that stuff would be worked out in the process, but you got to get the process rolling along, don't you?
Absolutely. And there's a section that talks about these case by case exemptions. Again, that could apply to someone who'd helped us out from one of those countries that we need to get them in as a refugee, et cetera. But that's something, this is not, you know, everyone's job to second and third and fourth guess what the president is doing. He's the commander in chief. He's the one ultimately, the buck stops there in terms of protecting the national security. And they need to have the freedom that courts normally give to the president on this. That's the other frustrating thing is we've got legal rules and we have a rule of law we're supposed to apply. You can't have courts just saying, oh, well, that doesn't count for Donald Trump because we just think he's horrible. We don't like him. I'm sorry. You know what? You have to apply the same rules to everyone, whether you voted for them or you didn't, whether you're happy with them or not. That's how it works in a system like ours where we have the rule of law.
Yeah, we don't like him, and somehow campaign rhetoric comes into play, which was not anything that was indicated in that proposed order from the president. But yet these activist judges wanted to bring that into play. But, Kerry, what is that? I mean, that makes a statement to these activist judges. The Supreme Court said, look, you know, we don't see it this way clearly. But what does this do? I mean, is it just a shot over the bow of their boat to maybe get their acts together, or, you know, any other remedy that comes along? Or, you know, or is this just going to be the order of the day that, you know, they're going to question this kind of stuff because it is Trump and, you know, we've got to go to the Supreme Court at every turn?
Well, Well, the Ninth Circuit, which is one of these courts, is notorious for being overturned all the time. They are the most activist court in the country. But look, the Fourth Circuit used to be known as one of the most conservative courts. President Obama switched that around entirely, and it's a really good reminder for the rest of us. We hear all about the Supreme Court, and that is, of course, incredibly important, but there are hundreds of judges throughout the country who are making these kind of decisions, and if you have shenanigans going on in the lower courts, the Supreme Court cannot fix them all. They don't. They take less than 1% of the cases that happen in this country, so we need to have really solid judges. There's 130 vacancies right now in the lower courts, and Trump is trying to get his list out there. We got to get the Senate confirming them because we cannot afford to leave these courts in activist hands.
Exactly. Well, a great day for religious freedom yesterday, right?
That's right. That was the kind of the big anticipated decision was in the case called Trinity Lutheran versus Missouri. And this is a Missouri program to help resurface playgrounds with using recycled tires. To help the kids be safer, to help use the recycled tires. And they said, anyone can apply for this grant. We've got these neutral criteria, except we're going to exclude this one preschool because it's associated with a Lutheran church. Mm. And they said, we don't want any state money going to any religious group at all. But what that happened is that you have a state program that goes to everyone but religious people, and it has a special a downgrade for all religious groups. That, the Supreme Court said, 7-2 violates the freedom of religion. That was a real great win. Again, because you have liberal justices who are, I think, sticking with what was a classically liberal principle of, you know what, religious
separation, church and state, all that, right? Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that was a real big win, and especially the fact that there were seven justices who were all in agreement on that. It's just a little scary. There's two people who think you can exclude religious groups from these things. As Justice Breyer, one of the liberals, wrote, you know, this theoretically, it sounds like they could even say, oh, we don't have to send a fire truck if your church or if your synagogue's on fire. That's crazy. You know, that's not how our country works. We're accepting all religions. We're not, you know, we're not trying to cut them out of the public sphere.
Now, there was another religious decision as well, right?
Well, the court accepted an important case, the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, and that's one that deals with, you know, the issue we've seen come up so many times. This one is a cake artist, but we've seen people having their livelihood threatened throughout the country, really, not just wedding vendors, photographers, et cetera, but even down to pizzerias and, you know, T-shirt stores. These issues of culture war stuff and conflicts with people's religious obligations is coming up all the time, and I'm glad to see that the court will be taking it. I'm hoping it will be able to continue its pattern of recognizing the importance of religious freedom and realizing we can do this in a way that everyone can live at peace together. Let's find a way to be understanding and tolerant of all religious beliefs.
Exactly. Well, you speak of T-shirt companies. One that a company, particularly in Kentucky, who is a company that we support and that prints up our T-shirts, Hands On, has won a couple of battles, and they're waiting and see on another appeal. And then, of course, we've talked with the Kleins on many occasions, and with her bakery, Melissa's Cakes, and it's just really a sad story. You know, here's somebody who has a desire to be an entrepreneur, put their, you know, all their ideas on the line, and doing so well, and suddenly their dream is squashed, and it's cost them like $140,000+, Carrie. I mean, it's a sad story, commentary.
Yeah, yeah. And in the Masterpiece Cake situation, the state allows other groups to pick and choose the messages, so they couldn't be forced to have a cake supported that was opposed to same-sex marriage. But they said, we can force you to do a cake celebrating a same-sex marriage. The government shouldn't be in the business of picking and choosing which messages it likes and doesn't like. That's about, you know, our freedom of speech, right?
Without
a
doubt.
Unfortunately, they've started doing that here. I think we just need to realize that these are private businesses. They can do what they want. And you know what? There are a lot of businesses down the street that want to take.
Well, Carrie, we got to leave it there. We got to wrap it up. Carrie Severino, I'm Bill Martinez live. Thank you, Carrie.
Hey there. Did you know that with a bachelor's degree, on average, you could make almost twice as much over a lifetime than a person with just a high school diploma? It's true. According to the 2012 U.S. Census Bureau, college grads with a bachelor's degree make almost twice as much as high school grads. Now, going back to school is easier than ever at Independence University. Log on and complete coursework from the park, or the beach, or even your couch watching the kids. And Independence University gives you the tools, a free tablet and laptop for undergrad students to use and keep when they graduate. That's right. Get a laptop so you can go to college from anywhere. Take the first step to a new career in business, information technology, healthcare, or graphic arts. Call to find the online degree program that's right for you, and you could be on your way to increasing your earning potential.
800-981-9347. 800-981-9347. That's 800-981-9347.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-557-0158. That's 800-557-0158. Again, 800-557-0158.
It's been said, any society is only 3 missed meals away from chaos. Those times may be near. Think about it. Our country faces multiple terrorist threats and aggressions from Russia and North Korea. Social unrest and violent marches yet again may lead to looting of stores and city shutdowns. And our crumbling infrastructure leaves our power grid vulnerable to long-term outages from a single cyber attack. When the chaos from any one of these threats arises, the government knows it can't provide during a widespread national emergency. That's why you need your own plan for self-reliance. That's where My Patriot Supply comes in. Get a 4-week survival food supply for only $99. That includes breakfast, lunches, and dinners. Order online at preparewithgcn.com. $99 for 4 weeks of survival food that tastes like homemade cooking and lasts up to 25 years from My Patriot Supply. Get your kits today at preparewithgcn.com. Free shipping is included. Preparewithgcn.com.
Join us online at BillMartinezLive.com. Bill Martinez Live.
Hey, we're coming at you in over 280 markets across this country, around the world, via shortwave, and Red State Talk Radio as well carries us live every day. So we welcome you all. Thank you for joining in on the conversation as we're talking now about recycling. You know, most people think of recycling as just the blue bins they set at the curb, but you know, recycling is actually much more than that. It is a process of scrap into tradable and highly valuable specification-grade products that manufacturers use as raw materials input to make new products. It's an industry that dates back to the beginning of human existence, if you think about it, has evolved into a highly technical and sophisticated industry benefiting your community and the environment. Now, some of the benefits of recycling is that it reduces the amount of material sent to landfills and incinerators. Good thing, I'm sure we would all agree, conserves natural resources such as timber, water, and minerals, prevents pollution by reducing the need to collect new raw materials, saves energy, reduces greenhouse gas emissions that contribute to global climate change, helps sustain the environment for future generations, and helps create new well-paying jobs in the recycling and manufacturing industries in the United States. And here to tell us more about it is the chief economist and director of commodities at ISRI, which is the which officially is titled. So you know what ISRI represents. In fact, we'll let our guests explain that. Joseph Pickard is with us. Excuse me, Joseph. I see I get emotional when I talk about recycling here. good to have you with us now. Explain to our audience ISRI and what that represents.
Sure. And thanks very much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
So ISRI is really the voice of the recycling industry. It stands for the Institute of Scrap Recycling Industries, and we represent about 1,300 member companies that are processing and recycling the whole range of recyclable commodities, from metals to paper to plastics to electronics. And our members have about 4,000 facilities, both here in the United States and in 34 countries around the world.
Well, based on the results of this study, I touched a little bit on the economic impact of the recycling industry, but I want you to expand on that a little bit more, if you would, Joseph.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And I think you're absolutely right when you say, you know, some people have a pretty good understanding of the environmental benefits associated with recycling, whether it's reduced material sent to landfills or reduced emissions or reduced need to mine or drill for new raw materials. But not a lot of people, I think, have a good understanding of just how big an economic impact the recycling industry has here in the United States. And so this study update that we just had commissioned reports back that our industry, the scrap recycling industry, generates more than $116 billion in economic activity annually.
Well, that's a huge number when you think about it. I mean, you know, when you take those blue bins for granted and you say, hey, but this is what happens when everybody does their part, right? And so even though that number is a pretty big number, what do you think in terms of the actual impact or the participation rate of, you know, of Americans with recycling? Where are we on that?
Well, yeah, recycling is taking place in every state and, you know, municipality in the country. Our industry processes over 130 million tons of recyclables every year. And there are a couple of different parts to the recycling industry. There's the municipal side, which most people think of as the curbside pickup with the blue bins.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also the non-municipal side or for-profit scrap recycling industry that's processing even more material than from the municipal side of things. If you think about all the old cars and appliances and other end-of-life products that aren't being put through the municipal stream but are still getting recycled, that's the material that's getting processed by our industry.
I see. Well, what are some of the types of jobs the industry is supporting?
So our member companies are processing metals and paper and plastics. They're using capital equipment to transform that material into commodity-grade raw materials that then consumers of scrap are going to consume. So the jobs in our industry are actually quite good-paying jobs. The economic study found that average total wages and benefits for the average job in our industry is over $76,000 per year. And I think this is really a growth industry that's going to continue to play an important part in terms of job creation and economic growth going forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, and speaking of economic growth, I mean, of course, the conversation of the day is our global relationship. But you say when it comes to recycling, there is that relationship that we have regarding global trade as well, right?
Absolutely, yeah. The industry has really become global in nature, as other industries have as well. And the United States is the largest exporter of scrap commodities in the world. So we have a disproportionately large role in the global marketplace for scrap recyclables. You know, every year we're exporting about 40 million tons of recycling commodities to over 150 countries around the world. So the jobs that are generated from that export activity, the salaries that are paid, the taxes that are generated are all important drivers for our economic growth here in the state.
Well, and the reason I want you to address that issue is because, it's anything that mentions global activity, people wince at because it becomes us against them. But, you know, like anything, there is balance. And I think in this particular case, you know, balance is noteworthy and people should have an understanding that they shouldn't just automatically come back with some sort of anti-global, you know, perspective without understanding that, there are, situations like this in recycling's global trade that's very positive for us economically, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, our scrap exports, you know, support jobs here in the United States. But I think just as importantly, it's an open market globally for scrap. And that's a good thing because markets can then direct the material to where it's needed most. Mm-hmm. And that's how markets should function.
Well, Joseph, another thing we just touched on, when you look at these numbers and you see the economic impact that recycling plays in the overall health of this U.S. economy, boy, it's all very positive, isn't it?
I think it is. You know, this is a cyclical industry by nature. You know, it's closely related to commodity markets, to manufacturing here in the U.S., and to global growth, which can fluctuate, certainly. But I think, you know, if you look at the longer term, the real emphasis on sustainable development, you know, the need for the raw materials to supply our future growth, I think the emphasis on recycling is only going to increase going forward.
And without a doubt, as we mentioned earlier, recycling industry responsible for more than 543,000 jobs in the U.S., generates more than $13.2 billion in federal, state, and local tax revenue annually. U.S. scrap exports generate more than $28 billion in total economic activity and provides for over half, almost 0.63% of the nation's total economic activity. I mean, this tells us that, you know, recycling is here, and we can only look forward to it getting better. Joseph, what do you say?
I completely agree. You know, and I think as we continue to raise public awareness about all the benefits of recycling, not just the environmental ones, which are very important, but the economic benefits as well, I think we're going to continue to see recycling rates improve and society place increasing emphasis on recycling. And I think that's what we're seeing today.
Well, Joseph Pickard serves as the Chief Economist and Director of Commodities at the Institute of Scrap Recycling Industries, Inc. in Washington, D.C., where he conducts research and analysis on commodity and scrap market developments and the key economic role that recycling plays both in the United States and abroad. Joseph, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate the time.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
Well, the conversation continues. Thank you for being with us. 18 minutes before the top of the hour right now. For more information, you can go to BillMartinezLive.com. Get involved in the conversation at BMartinezLive.com.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau, so call now. 800-536-4436. That's 800-536-4436. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-536-4436.
Are you married? Do you and your husband both have term life insurance? If you both don't, you should. You have a lot to protect. Call now, get a free quote for your husband, and while you're at it, get a quote for yourself too, because you both need term life insurance. Call now. 800-915-9164. 800-915-9164. 800-915-9164. Rates are at all-time lows. We'll shop over 30 top-rated companies to get you the best possible rates. Term life insurance, it's the perfect way to protect the quality of your family's lifestyle. You and your husband both need term life insurance, so call now for a free quote for the both of you. 800-915-9164. 800-915-9164. 800-915-9164.
Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon you'll need a plan and place to survive.
Forget bunkers. You're not a live underground gopher. You need survivalist camps. The ultimate fully functional off-the-grid mobile survival bug out house that's well equipped and custom built to outlast any other RV or trailer. Bold statement, you bet. See them now at survivalistcamps.com. That's survivalistcamps.com. Trust your family's survival to survivalistcamps.com.
Everything you've heard about or read about regarding identity theft is wrong. There are dozens and dozens of companies out there claiming that they can prevent identity theft or that monitoring your credit file will help you prevent identity theft. And I'm here to tell you, it's simply not true. It's a scam. No one can prevent identity theft, and I mean no one. Credit monitoring will not alert you to 80% of the fraudulent issues that can happen to you. Friends, there's only one company that has the solution to identity theft. That's my friends over at Liberty ID. Liberty ID fixes the damages caused by identity theft. In fact, they've successfully restored the identities of over 60,000 individuals without fail. Call my friends at Liberty ID today to see if you've been compromised. If you're on your cell phone, you probably have been. And my friends at Liberty ID will let you know if you have and what you can do to fix it. Call right now, 844-44-LIBERTY. That's 844-44-LIBERTY. Or visit them at libertyid.com and use discount code GCN at checkout.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I'm here to tell you about GCNTelecare.com, a team of board-certified doctors assisting you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Within 15 minutes of registration, care your family can afford. Revolutionizing the healthcare industry, virtual consulting, providing diagnosis of non-emergency medical issues by phone or secure video on computer or smart mobile devices. GCNTelecare.com, virtual care anywhere.
It's always a great day here at Bill Martinez Live. What more could you want?
14 minutes before the top of the hour, back with you, Bill Martinez here. Thomas Hazlitt joins us now. His brand new book, Political Spectrum, The Tumultuous Liberation of Wireless Technology, From Herbert Hoover to the Smartphone. Tom, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you, sir?
I'm well, thank you.
Well, Mr. Hazlitt is the H.H. Macaulay Endowed Chair in Economics at Clemson University and former FCC Chief Economist. And this is his new book that we're talking about. Tom, what motivated you to write this book?
Well, as an economist, I've studied how we regulate the wireless industry, and particularly how we distribute through government, how we distribute the rights to use airwaves.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out not to be a very, I mean, it's a technical story if you want to make it that, but there's just a lot of politics to the real process of how innovators, competitors, and service suppliers get access to airwaves. It's a very mm-hmm. political process. It's been that way since at least 1927, when the Radio Act, the brainchild of Secretary of Commerce Herbert Hoover, before mm-hmm. he was president, was enacted into law. And it actually allows a lot of anti-competitive action on the part of government and on the part of incumbent radio operators, which ends up stifling the new technologies and really makes things worse for consumers.
Yeah, we're almost grateful, you know, for what's happening with the Internet, because that's been a great training ground, and it's opened up the marketplace, you know, as you say, for innovation that's taken place. I've been in radio for most of my life, Tom, and, you know, and I think that, you know, what the FCC did in order to supposedly expand, you know, the opportunity for radio ownership, especially to minorities, did just the opposite. Now it's so consolidated that, you know, the country, for all intent and purposes, is controlled by maybe, you know, a dozen broadcasting entities, whereas before, I remember in my early days of radio, you'd go to each market, there'd be 100 owners, a lot of mom-and-pop stations and opportunities, a lot of creative opportunities that were available in each of these communities. Now they're all but gone.
Well, there's a lot of different angles on this, and I'll mention a couple here.
Yeah,
The fact is that information programming in general expanded enormously after the federal government eliminated the Fairness Doctrine. The Fairness Doctrine was supposed to encourage radio stations to cover controversial issues of importance to their local communities and to do so from balanced perspectives. But it allowed people who were offended by the opinions expressed to actually invoke free equal time demands. And this had a chilling effect, as has been shown in research on the matter. And in fact, when the government, it was very controversial under the Reagan FCC, August of 1987, when the government decided to end the Fairness Doctrine that had been in effect for decades, you saw an explosion of news and talk and even public affairs programming on both AM and FM. Right. And that led to a lot more competition in the marketplace of ideas. Mm-hmm. In terms of actual ownership, there are a lot of issues here. There has been some liberalization and some expansion, particularly with respect to how the internet is accessed, and that's been really a tremendous flowering of competition. But the fact is that we're still very parsimonious, very, very conservative in how many rights are given out, and even low-powered stations have a very difficult time getting into the market competing with some of the bigger corporations that do have access to the airways. So we still have a long way to go. But we've found that through some market-oriented reforms, there can be a lot more competition and innovation.
Well, I'm for market reforms, and I'm encouraged to hear what you're saying. But what I'm experiencing from my venue, we've got a ways to go, and possibly are we going to run into the situation because, as you state, because of what internet is doing and all these different opportunities. I see radio. I mean, they always talk about the demise of radio, and it always seems to be mature or a little premature, and it finds a way to survive another day. But I'm wondering if it might possibly go the way of the Underwood typewriter because of this technology, this new technology is coming down with Lexus and all this AI technology that is coming down the pike.
Well, we don't know where it's going to go, and we do want to have competitive, innovative forces be allowed to test new products. One of the things that has been an interesting innovation in the last 15 years. And this took a while to get into the market, but satellite radio has been very, very big in offering a wide swath of choice from different political perspectives and so forth. Now, it does compete with terrestrial radio. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, because of some of the rules that the existing radio stations lobbied for and got, the irony is that satellite radio is not allowed to do any local programming in the sense that the local programs have to be transmitted nationally. They have to take up bandwidth. So you can do a program that gives news, weather, and sports for Seattle listeners, but it has to be broadcast in Miami. It has to go everywhere. Right. And that's a very inefficient way to do local programming, as you well know. But that was a protection to the existing radio stations because they want to protect and have protected to a great extent their local advertising revenues. So there are many of these impediments that are still in the market, and some of them are being eclipsed by time and technology, but it takes a long while to do that, and in fact, it really is a drag on progress.
Well, Tom, what do you want people to take away from your book, The Political Spectrum?
Well, first, it's a very important slice of life. Wireless and all the amenities now that kids, of course, grow up with mm-hmm. online wireless access, they think it's just background noise to them. It's just what they grow up with. It's just a social amenity. It's extremely important. It's the economic oxygen of the modern economy. And there's a very political way that we've been allocating the airwaves for 90 years. We have experimented and adopted some important reforms, and that has led to the tremendous progress. We're now in the 10th anniversary this month of the iPhone. The iPhone was able to come into the marketplace with a pretty amazing new radio, and actually it found, because of the relaxation of the rules, that the carriers in the mobile space were free to adopt the iPhone, and in fact they bid against each other, and they sort of trampled each other, all the networks trying to get access. AT&T got first, but now all the networks have access to the iPhone. They actually supplied the radio spectrum for that pretty amazing new device. It's mm-hmm. now become an iconic consumer appliance. And, of course, the smartphone revolution has changed the world in many respects, and it has given birth to a diversity of applications, services, and political expression through content. So what people need to understand is that these important stories about how we regulate the airwaves are really accessible. They have some of the problems of what some might call crony capitalism or rigid top-down government allocations, but that there has been progress and that we can learn from our mistakes. And hopefully that is the message that people will take.
Well, Tom, what do you think about the argument? People are saying these tech giants are becoming, you know, such behemoths that they are a political force in and of themselves.
Well, that's always been the case. I mean, it was the case with the Carnegie Steel over 100 years ago, and certainly the Rockefeller Oil Company. And the point for public policy is to have a flexible system where there are upstarts like Google, which so recently was an upstart, or Apple, or Microsoft for that matter, that can come and challenge the existing structure. Now, do they get big and powerful? Yes. We want to keep markets open. We do have rules for keeping them open. The problem are that, we also have a lot of rules which are antiquated and which do not allow the full range of experimentation and innovation that are possible. The things coming out of the science lab for new wireless technologies are just amazing. Of course, mobile health is one of the great applications where you use your smartphone. I mean, you have this very, very sophisticated computer that's literally on your body 24/7 now. Right. Why not use it to monitor your vital signs and communicate with your doctors just in the normal course of a day to see how you're doing and keep up on your health status. Those applications are actually here, they're ready. Some people, diabetics and others, are actually using the smartphone for some of this monitoring. But to actually invigorate the markets and to give the bandwidth to the networks that is needed for more of these, you know, pretty amazing new devices, services, and applications, we need to loosen up on the spectrum allocation system. We have still today, most of the spectrum is just set aside for legacy uses that might have made some sense 50 years ago, but are entirely too rigid today and certainly the wrong technology. We need to have a system that's more flexible. And you know, as I said, we've done the experiments. We know that there are rules that work that allow the market to compete and to use spectrum in new and innovative ways. But we have to push that forward and get more of that so that these tremendous new competitors and applications and ways of doing business can challenge the old companies and the old business structures.
Well, Tom, as we wrap things up here right now, the final question is, can we get there? How long will it take us to loosen things up to where we could, I appreciate your vision. It's encouraging to hope that we could generate a lot more activity that would be win-win for all concerned if we loosen things up a little bit.
Well, it depends on what day you catch me, whether or not I'm, optimistic or pessimistic. Over the long run, over the long run, I'm terribly optimistic because if you go back, Edwin Howard Armstrong, as we talk about in the book, came up with a wonderful radio technology called FM in the 1930s.
Right.
And he spent 10, 15 years really pushing that forward, and he was absolutely flummoxed by the regulators that first allocated some spectrum before World War II and then took it away from them after World War II.
Right.
And basically killed FM, and he committed suicide over it in the early 1950s. Finally, FM was allowed to compete with its high fidelity sound quality in the 1960s, and it very quickly overtook AM.
Exactly. Well, Tom, I'm sorry, we're out of time. We've got to leave it right there. We'll have to direct everybody to your book, The Political Spectrum, The Tumultuous Liberation of Wireless Technology from Herbert Hoover to the Smartphone. It'll be linked on our website at BillMartinezLive.com. Thomas Hazlett, I'm Bill Martinez Live. Thank you, Tom.
Biochemistry determines your mood, memory, energy, and endurance. Your body's primary metabolic function is to make protein. One World Whey is a unique, non-denatured protein. This enables your body to have virtually 100% utilization, whereas typical whey protein powders offer no more than 18% utilization of protein. One World Whey also delivers life-giving frequencies to your cells. The net result for so many people is improved energy, mood, and elimination of pain from inflammation.
This technologically enhanced One World Whey has been really amazing for me. I'm 36 years old, and for the past several years, I've been struggling with lack of energy, drive, and stamina. And after just 2 weeks on this product, I'm feeling so much more energy. My yoga practice has deepened, and as a massage therapist, I'm able to see more clients than I've been able to in years. I've never felt results that quick with anything I've ever taken.
Call 888-988-3325 or visit oneworldway.com. That's oneworld, W-H-E-Y.com.
We use cell phones.